Welcome to the Commonwealth Club. I'm George Hammond, Chair of the Humanities Forum, which organized tonight's event. I'd like to welcome our live audience here in San Francisco and our radio and online audiences. And I'm pleased to introduce Professor Adrian Meyer today, the author of The Amazons, Lives and Legends of Warrior Women Across the Ancient World. Adrian, of course, this is in our first book. She is the author of The Poison King, The Life and Legend of Mithridates. Did I get that close? Okay. Rome's Deadliest Enemy by Princeton University Press, which was a finalist for the National Book Award and named one of the best books of 2009 by the Washington Post. Her other books include Greek Fire, Poison Arrows and Scorpion Bombs, Biological and Chemical Warfare in the Ancient World, and The First Fossil Hunters, Dinosaurs, Mammoths, and Myth in Greek and Roman Times. She's a research scholar in classics and history of science at Stanford University, and she promises to tell us where the Amazon's real. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I don't think I'll need this tonight, but we'll see. Thank you. It's really an honor to be invited to talk about ancient Amazons. Oh, you need to. Can everyone hear me now? Great. It's an honor to be invited to talk about ancient Amazons with such a distinguished and friendly audience. I want to thank everyone at the Commonwealth Club for making my visit possible. Let's see if this works. Yes, we seem to be surrounded by Amazons these days. First, there was Xena, warrior princess, Mulan, brave, movies like The Hunger Games and Centurion, shield maidens in the Vikings TV series, powerful women in the Game of Thrones. I heard that Marvel Comics is just now introducing a female Thor war goddess, and Wonder Woman. How far have we gone? This is a little fast. Wonder Woman, who just appeared in World War II, is making a comeback with her own movie in 2017. I hear they've already cast it and started filming. And women and girls across America and actually around the world are taking up bows and arrows and practicing horseback archery in unprecedented numbers. You can actually learn how to do that from some of these women. See me afterwards if you want their contact information. And meanwhile, the news from the Middle East is filled with images of women soldiers from Kurdistan fighting the Islamic State. I think the last estimate is about 10,000 women recruited into the Kurdish forces fighting ISIS. So we are surrounded by stories and images of warrior women. More than 2,500 years ago, the ancient Greeks also surrounded themselves with images of Amazons and stories of Amazons. Who were the ancient Amazons? Greeks described Amazons as the equals of men, independent, fearless, barbarian women who gloried in freedom and battle. These are just some Amazons in classical Greek sculpture. In Greek mythology, Amazons were fierce warrior women dwelling on the fringes of the known world. These war-loving women were the arch-enemies of the Greeks. The greatest heroes of myth, Hercules or Heracles, Theseus, Achilles, they all had to prove their courage by dueling with an Amazon queen. And the city of Athens, they just reveled in their courageous victory over a powerful Amazon army that they claimed had once invaded Greece itself. And in that war, the Amazons were seeking revenge for Hercules' killing of their queen, Hippolyta, and Theseus' capture of her sister, Antiope. And I think Antiope is one of the most interesting Amazons of Greek mythology. And you could say Antiope is the star of my talk tonight. I thought it would be interesting to look at the surprising number of tales, myths, and versions of stories that swirled around Antiope. She was the only Amazon to marry a Greek hero, only one to lose her freedom by marrying a Greek hero. And get ready for some time travel, because those tales are going to take us from classical Greece to modern Broadway and back again. First, I just want to set the scene with some background and some evidence of Amazons in myth and history. And their I don't know why it's jumping two at a time. Some thrilling war adventures and romances about Amazons were recounted in epic poems and many other ancient writings. And Amazons were wildly popular in Greek art, in public sculptures like these, and in wall frescoes in public places, and on vase paintings. But was there anything real about Amazons? Well, we now know that the Greek stories and the pictures, images, ideas of Amazons were at least partly influenced by the lives of steppe nomads who roamed the vast lands north and east of the Aegean. They were called Thracians, Sarmatians, Sakha, Scythians, Maeotians, and their neighbors. There were countless numbers of these tribes. We have many of their names, many of the names we don't know. And among these peoples, the women rode horses. They went hunting with bows and arrows and spears. They knew how to defend themselves and the rest of the tribe, and they even rode to war just like the men. And the lives of those nomadic girls and women, they were so different from the lives of Greek women, who were normally confined indoors to weave and mind children. The diverse but culturally related steppe tribes had their own names, they had their own languages, they had their own histories, but they became known to the Greeks by a blanket term, the Scythians. That was the collective name for the nomadic horse archers who ranged across Scythia, the name for the immense territory that stretched from the Black Sea and the Caucasus all the way to Mongolia and Inner Asia. Now, the Scythians themselves, they didn't leave any writings for us. So we have to, in order to know about them, we have to rely on their neighbors who did write about them, comparative ethnology, anthropology, and archaeology, in order to know about their culture, which was centered on horses and on archery. Thanks to recent and exciting archaeological excavations of hundreds of Scythian graves, I think more than 1,000 have been excavated by this time, and they're still ongoing. They're in the Ukraine, southern Russia, the Caucasus area, all the way across Central Asia. And we now know that some of the battle-scarred skeletons that were buried with weapons were female in Scythia. It used to be now that any time you found a body or a skeleton buried with weapons, archaeologists would just routinely identify that as a male warrior, and that does still happen. Just one recent example is an Etruscan tomb of a warrior that was discovered in September 2013. There was a skeleton holding a large lance. It was assumed to be a man. The Italian archaeologists announced they'd found the rich grave of a warrior chieftain. But DNA was done. DNA testing was done immediately afterwards, and it revealed that the person holding the lance was female. So the archaeologists had to scramble to reword their announcement. Modern DNA and bioarchaeological testing of bones, skeletons, in ancient Scythia are showing that in some cemetery complexes, about 25 to 37% of the women were active warriors. In other words, they were true Amazons, buried with weapons just like the men, and some of them had war wounds just like the men. These are some typical battle injuries on women's skeletons buried with weapons. Ribs slashed by a sword on the left there, and a skull punctured by a pointed battle axe, just like those shown in the Greek vase paintings. And here's some more archaeological evidence of fighting women in the Black Sea, the Caucasus region, and Central Asia. These are areas where the Greeks once located Scythians and Amazons. Well, the idea of warlike foreign females, the opposites of Greek women, certainly served many symbolic and psychological functions for the Greeks. I think that's probably undeniable. But archaeology is now confirming that Amazons were not simply figments of the Greek imagination, as many classical scholars have believed and argued. Indeed, the Greeks were not the only ones to spin tales about warrior women in antiquity. I found little known I think, rather surprising examples of Amazon-like traditions in many other ancient non-Greek cultures that knew about the Scythian nomads, such as the people of the Caucasus, Persia, Egypt, Central Asia, and China. They all have narratives that also drew on their encounters with steppe nomads, and these people's heroes also battled warrior women, but these non-Greek scenarios of Amazon-like women were not as dark as the Greek myths were. This is just a map that shows where the Greeks located Amazon strongholds within Scythia. So the Greeks, we can say with certainty, did not invent the idea of Amazons, but the Greek mythic script certainly does appear to be unique in its hostility to Amazons. In the world of Greek myth, no matter how brave and attractive they were, the freedom-loving, warlike Amazons could never emerge victorious over the Greek heroes. There was only one Amazon in Greek myth who lost her freedom through marriage, as I already mentioned. She married a Greek hero. Her name was Antiope. And Antiope became the wife of Theseus, who was the legendary first king of Athens. And just to recap that myth for you, for his ninth labor, you probably already know this, but Hercules and his companions sailed to the land of the Amazons in Pontus. That's the southern coast of the Black Sea, now Turkey. Their mission was to obtain that precious war belt that was owned by the queen of the Amazons, Hippolyta. On the Greeks' arrival on their shores, at first Hippolyta and her Amazons welcomed the strangers to their land, and according to some versions of the myth, Hippolyta, queen of the Amazons, even offered to give her belt to Hercules as a friendly gift. And there are illustrations of that happy alternative in some vase paintings, so we know that some people told the story that way. Here we see young Queen Hippolyta. She's offering her belt to a very boyish-looking Hercules sitting calmly on a rock. This is another couple of examples of vase paintings that show Queen Hippolyta of the Amazons offering that war belt to the young Hercules. This is sort of a relaxed, romantic scene, and he is actually shown in the stance of a youthful lover leaning on his club. Very jaunty stance that you see on other vase paintings of love scenes. But such a peaceful encounter, that doesn't make a very thrilling story. And the more well-known version of the myth that we have, a violent struggle broke out between the Greeks and the Amazons, and in the battle, Hercules kills Queen Hippolyta, and the battle between the Amazons and Hercules and the Greeks was an extremely popular subject for vase painters and other artists, sculptors, and in stark contrast to the peaceful scenes showing Queen Hippolyta handing over her belt as a friendly gift of hospitality or friendship, the battle images are always very brutal and violent, as you can see. Here's some more examples of the artwork. It's very very violent. And yet another scene of Hercules killing Hippolyta and actually grabbing her belt. In the fighting, according to the myth, the Greeks captured several Amazons and took them away in their ships. One of these captives was Antiope, sister of Queen Hippolyta. Antiope then was forced to become the wife of Theseus, the great Athenian hero, and the capture of Antiope was also a favorite subject for Greek artists. But exactly how was Antiope transformed from a fierce, independent warrior princess into the domesticated wife of Theseus, legendary king of Athens? There's no single story from antiquity to tell us the answer. There were a great many different versions of what happened. And I think the profusion of so many alternative tales about Antiope, I think that reveals the Greek fascination with Antiope's plight and the choices that she faced. The existence of so many multiple storylines about Antiope and about individual Amazon queens, other queens, that appears to be a hallmark of their heroic stature. And the sheer number of competing narratives about Antiope, which we're going to talk about tonight, and about Hippolyta and Penthesilea, the Amazon queen who was killed by Achilles at the battlefield of Troy. I think the sheer number of those stories is strong evidence that these were heroines who were considered the equals of those heroes, Hercules, Theseus, Achilles, Odysseus, and other famous male heroes in mythology, whose adventures also spawned a great many stories and versions of their life stories. Now, it's true that all Amazons in Greek myths, they die young and beautiful. But a short, splendid life and a violent death in battle, that's the perfect heroic ideal in Greek myth. It's what every great Greek hero craved for himself, a beautiful death, a noble, honorable death that would guarantee eternal fame and glory. Beautiful death on the battlefield, that almost defines a Greek hero. And yet, if you look at mythology, Greek mythology, it's the Amazons who achieve that heroic dream in the Greek myths. If you stop to think about it, it's really quite striking. So many Amazons actually surpass the Greek mythic heroes in the manner of their deaths. Despite the impressive courage and might, not one great Greek hero manages to achieve a glorious death on the battlefield. Let's look at them. Perseus, the celebrated hero who killed Medusa. He died of old age. No Amazon ever died of old age. Bellerophon. Bellerophon was thrown by his flying horse Pegasus into a thorn bush. He ended up a blind, lame hermit the rest of his life. All right, what about Hercules? Superhero of Greek myth. He doesn't perish in battle. He dies trapped in a poison cloak, a gift from his misguided wife. Achilles. Surely you're going to expect Achilles to die gloriously. But even the great Achilles was denied a heroic death at Troy. Achilles, as you recall, he was felled by an arrow in the heel, shot from behind, not even in face-to-face combat. What about Jason, leader of the Argonauts, crushed in his sleep by a rotten beam from his old ship, the Argo. Theseus, Athens' founding hero, shoved off a cliff by an elderly king, not a glorious death. In contrast, all Amazons in Greek art and literature fight and die courageously in battle in art and literature. So Amazons were foreigners, they were enemies of the Greeks, but they were considered heroic figures. That statistic up in the upper right is not quite accurate, but someone made that meme for me and I thought it was... it's almost accurate. I think there are two or three Amazons gesturing for mercy on a few vase paintings. Otherwise, they never do. For the Greeks, the Amazons' unyielding rejection of traditional patriarchal marriage was another one of their most defining characteristics. That was an attribute that really captured the attention of the Greeks. Numerous stories about Theseus and Antiope could be seen as variations on the theme, what would happen if a Greek hero were to marry an Amazon? Just as there were some alternate tales and artists' illustrations exploring different angles on the nature of that brief encounter between Hercules and Hippolyta, the idea of a Greek hero with an Amazon wife spun off many other threads in Greek literature and art. In his biography of Theseus, for example, the Roman-era biographer, historian Plutarch, discussed several conflicting stories about Antiope, and those tales were told by more than half a dozen different Greek authors, but their works haven't survived. We have to depend on Plutarch to summarize them. He says that some believed that Theseus accompanied Hercules on the quest for Hippolyta's war belt, but Plutarch himself thought that it was much more convincing that Theseus must have commanded his own expedition to the Amazon heartland. And in Plutarch's telling, that encounter began very peacefully. The Amazon sent out a welcoming party to meet the strangers, and in this version, Antiope is actually the queen of the Amazons, and she presents gifts to Theseus. and then he slyly invites her onto his ship. Antiope agrees to come on board to see his ship. Suddenly, when she's on board, Theseus raises the anchor and sails off with Antiope to the shock and outrage of all the Amazons on the shore. Now, kidnapping, rape, those would be right in character for Theseus. Not a very pleasant hero of Athens. There are many stories that show that he was a kind of serial sexual predator. Plutarch recounts several episodes in Theseus's life that Plutarch labels dishonorable and indecent. Theseus captured and abandoned other women, including underage maidens, and long before Theseus kidnapped Antiope, the Amazon. For example, the Athenians like to brag that he had abducted Helen of Troy when she was just a little girl. Now, Plutarch disapproved of acts like that, but writing about 400 years before Plutarch, the Greek historian Herodotus expressed a very different view. Herodotus listed a series of violent captures of foreign women by, for example, the Phoenicians, the Greeks, the Trojans. He wrote, "In my opinion, abducting young women is not lawful, but it's silly to make a fuss about it after the fact. It's obvious that no young woman allows herself to be abducted if she does not wish to be," unquote. Oh. Boo. Yes. But it's interesting. These are two views, Plutarch and Herodotus, written 400 years apart, and I think that those opposing views might help explain some of those conflicting details in art and literature about the nature of the relationship of Theseus and Antiope. Ancient sculptors and painters illustrated many scenes depicting Antiope's defeat at the hands of the Greeks and her capture by Theseus. On the left is an example. It's an Etruscan urn. The figures on top of the urn show Theseus carrying off Antiope, and they are surrounded by four Amazon archers on horses. And on the right, we see Theseus seizing Antiope from the temple. This is from the Temple of Apollo in Eritrea, Greece. Some Greek vases depict a violent abduction with Theseus is roughly carrying away a struggling, desperately gesturing Antiope. She's either shown clutching her bow or her battle axe. But the question still remains, was Antiope taken by force, as some stories and images tell us, or was she tricked somehow in some other alternative versions? Was she a prisoner of war? Could Antiope have somehow escaped from Theseus's ship? And as we'll see at the end of my talk, Herodotus suggested that after the battle for Hippolyta's war belt, some of the other captive Amazons did manage to escape and regain their freedom. Could Antiope have been swept away by love for Theseus? Should we imagine a sort of combination of abduction and seduction? Think of Antiope falling victim to some sort of ancient Stockholm syndrome, that emotional bonding that with one's kidnapper, as sometimes experienced by hostages. I think it's striking and intriguing that all of these possible scenarios that I just mentioned in some way or another are explored in the competing ancient versions of the Antiope myth. Theseus did not immediately return to Athens after he captured Antiope. According to an ancient local tradition recorded in the 4th century BC by a historian named Menecrates of Bithynia, that's an area in northwestern Turkey. In this ancient Bithynian legend, Theseus was wandering around Asia Minor, which is now Turkey, having many other adventures and getting to know his new captive bride. Unfortunately, that historian's works are lost. We only have a summary, once again, in Plutarch. And that summary is maddeningly sketchy, but it's all we have. Antiope's own state of mind is not really described in this curious little tale, but the story reveals something about Antiope's character, her personality, as it was imagined in antiquity. In this tradition, three young Athenian brothers were members of Theseus's expeditionary force to the heart of Amazon country. And during their long return trip home, As the Greeks were meandering around what is now Turkey, the youngest brother, named Siloas, fell in love with Antiope, the captive Amazon. She was understood to belong to the king of Athens, Theseus. Antiope rejected the young suitor. According to the story in Plutarch, she did this, quote, firmly but gracefully, handling the situation with gentleness and discretion, unquote. But poor lovesick Siloas, he drowned himself in a river for unrequited love for the Amazon. Antiope tried to keep the young man's declaration of love a secret from Theseus, but Theseus did finally find out, and when he found out what had happened, he was filled with sorrow, the loss of one of his Athenian sailors. He named the river Siloas in the youth's honor, and he founded the city of Pithopolis at that spot. Now, we only have a few scraps of this story. It must have been a well-known, detailed, local, oral tradition among the many other myths about Antiope and Theseus. And the persistence of this ancient tale, I think, is rather remarkable. I learned recently that both the river and the modern little Turkish village at that spot still preserves the ancient name Siloas. It's Siloas in Turkish. And on the banks of the what is now called the Siloas River, near the village, archaeologists have discovered the ruins of Pithopolis, the town said to be founded by Theseus in that myth. So some 2,000 years ago, Menecrates, a historian of Bithynia, apparently was recounting a local legend that explained how the river Siloas got its name. It commemorated a tragic incident during the honeymoon of Theseus and Antiope. And today, the Turkish villagers of Siloas, they tell a slightly different tradition. I found it online on the village's website. They conflate Theseus' sailors with Jason and the Argonauts. According to the village chronicles, the name of their town, they say, comes from, quote, the hopeless love of one of the Greek Argonauts who drowned in the Siloas River, unquote. In antiquity, a great many cities in Anatolia, Asia Minor, now Turkey, named themselves after Amazons, Amazons that they considered their founders. Ephesus, Chyme, Smyrna, Sinope, Latoria, Mytilene, Priene, Pitani. Those are just a few examples of cities and towns that took great pride in their claim to have been founded by Amazons. And many of these cities issued coins in antiquity commemorating their Amazon heritage with portraits of Amazons, as you can see here. Having an Amazon legend attached to your town's history was highly desirable in antiquity. Indeed, the tragic romance of Antiope and Siloas was also claimed by yet another town, ancient town, called Siloae. This town in ancient Cilicia was founded in about 700 BC, and it fell under Persian rule in antiquity. And then in the mid-5th century BC, Siloae began to issue a series of their own silver coins portraying a portrait or profile of an Amazon in a pointed cap. And their other coins, their other silver coins, depict an Amazon stringing her Scythian-style bow. These coins are all from about 450 to 360 BC. But scholars have puzzled over the question of why would this ancient city of Siloae decide to depict an Amazon on their coins? Siloae was not among the cities that were known to be named for an Amazon founder. But I think that the obscure little story that was preserved by Plutarch, I think that suggests the reason. The name Siloae is very similar to the Greek name Siloas, and the Athenian youth who was a companion of Theseus, king of Athens, it was attractive for this town to associate themselves with one of Theseus's men. So this town could link their own mytho-history now with that of powerful Athens, and they would want to do that now. They would like to have the friendship of Athens in the 5th century BC because now the Greeks have defeated the Persians, so they're now switching their allegiance to Greece. It seems safe to conclude that the Amazon on their coins is meant to be Antiope, the Amazon wife captured by Theseus and the object of young Soloeus' affections. The relationship between Theseus and Antiope seems to be quite friendly in this Bithynian tale. Yet another version of a Greek myth about Antiope claimed that Antiope fell in love with Theseus while the Greeks were attacking the Amazon homeland. And in this story, it was said that Antiope betrayed her sister Amazons to the Greeks. This version was apparently favored by, we know it was favored by, perhaps even created by patriotic Athenians in the 4th century BC. This alleged love affair between Antiope and Theseus first appears in a speech by an Athenian orator named Isocrates in 380 BC. That's the first written mention that we have of it, but he was probably alluding to a tale or a rumor that was already familiar to his Athenian audience. He says, Antiope, quote, became enamored of Theseus. She broke the Amazon's own laws against marriage by following Theseus home to Athens and living with him as his wife, unquote. Now, Isocrates is making Antiope into a kind of stalker instead of a captive bride. By the time of Pausanias, a Greek writer, some 400 years later, this Athenian tale had developed into more of a romance. As Pausanias tells it, Theseus was welcomed as an honored guest in the land of the Amazons, and he joined them in hunting and other sports. And while he was a guest, young Antiope fell in love with the handsome Greek hero. Pausanias says, with devotion so deep that it eclipsed her love for her sister warriors, Antiope agreed to elope with Theseus back to Athens. In this new Athenian version of the myth, there's no forcible abduction. Instead, Antiope betrays the Amazon code herself. She rejects the freedom of the Amazon life, and she willingly gives up her independence by agreeing to become Theseus's bride. This patriotic Athenian story insists that it was Antiope's choice to marry Theseus, and it suggests that a happy Athenian family was the result, at least until war broke out when the angry Amazons bent on revenge and invaded Athens, planning to take revenge and free Antiope. Some other strands of the ancient Antiope myth revolve around intrigues in Athens' royal household, and those are some domestic plots. Theseus and Antiope have a son. They name him Hippolytus, and there's a cluster of plot twists and turns. They're just too complex to go into here, but mayhem erupts in Athens when Theseus is suddenly compelled by the fates to kill his Amazon wife to protect his new love, Phaedra. That's a messy situation. It's a kind of an ancient Greek soap opera. In this version, Antiope is a kind of desperate housewife. And I think it's amusing that to learn that in the 18th century, Europeans also like to imagine Antiope as a tame Amazon. And in their vision, she became the contented, docile wife of Theseus and the mother of his son, little Hippolytus. And you can see their happy family shown in this neoclassical fake gem from Europe. And now, since we're already jumping into modern times here, I think it might be interesting to compare these ancient Athenian versions of a love affair for Antiope and Theseus with a popular Broadway play about Amazons that I mentioned at the beginning of my talk. That play was produced long before I think many of you were born, but I think there must be some film buffs here. I think you'll recognize the star. Modern speculations about Antiope's choices as an Amazon really burst into popular consciousness in the United States in the 1920s when that play was written. The paternalistic ancient Athenian slant on the story of Antiope, claiming that she wasn't kidnapped after all, but that she herself rejected her unnatural freedom as an Amazon, that was echoed in this racy comedy that became a huge hit on Broadway. These are just a few posters. The play was written in 1924, in the era of American women's rising confidence, independence, new voting rights. The play, The Warrior's Husband, was a satire that turned on male and female role reversals. Just as in ancient Athens, the idea of liberated women at that time was both exhilarating but also disturbing for modern audiences. Like the ancient Greeks, perhaps, the modern men imagined that if women were powerful and independent, then the men could only be weak, lily-livered slaves. And the notion of equal companionship seemed impossible. The Broadway play was set in Pontus during the quest by Hercules and Theseus for Hippolyta's girdle. And the powerful Amazons of that realm routinely dominate their sissy husbands with iron-fisted authority to the great amusement of the audience. And the women are suddenly unnerved by the appearance of dashing, muscle-bound Greeks on their shores, led by Theseus. The starring role of Antiope was played by the young, athletic Katharine Hepburn in 1932 on Broadway. She was 24 years old. The audience went wild at Hepburn's entrance on the stage. She was dressed in this silver tunic and helmet, leaping down a flight of stairs with a dead stag on her shoulders. And I wish I had a picture of that. I looked and I couldn't find it, but I did manage to find a photo of another actress in the same role a decade later in a popular revival of this play. And here's Nanette Fabre as Antiope posing with that dead stag. This is 1943 as a revival of The Warrior's Husband on Broadway under a different title. But let's go back to Katharine Hepburn, because she really got into the role of Antiope. I found out that Hepburn was also deeply involved in the production of the play. She herself had been raised by her forward-thinking parents to be a sort of American Amazon, the equal of any man. As a tomboy in the 1920s, she cut her hair short. She called herself Jimmy. And at college, Bryn Mawr, she was the first girl to wear trousers at the college. She graduated from Bryn Mawr in 1928 with a degree in history and philosophy. But Katharine Hepburn was determined to be an actress. And her first successful part was this role of the young Amazon Antiope, which she played as a sure-footed, sexy, boyish woman, as Hepburn later recalled in her autobiography. And she went on to say, that role had a tremendous influence on my career and my so-called personality, unquote. At once notorious and admired, Katharine Hepburn embodied fierce, strong-willed female independence in that day. And like the ancient Amazons for the classical Greeks, her persona was both thrilling and daunting. Notably, Hepburn felt most comfortable wearing trousers. And I know it's very hard for many of you to believe nowadays, but that was a shocking and a fabulous fashion statement of her time period. Hepburn's signature outfit made trousers the most provocative feminine attire of her day, and that's yet another significant, I think, Amazonian aspect of Hepburn's appeal. Amazons and vase paintings typically sport similar action wear made for ease of movement and protection. Amazons in Greek art often wear trousers or close-fitting leggings that look like tights or cat suits. These pictures were obviously intended to shock and titillate Greek viewers who were used to thinking of arm and leg coverings as barbaric and outlandish, but also somehow quite bold and dashing when worn by foreign women. And that leads us to an intriguing question. Who invented trousers? Amazons, of course. According to the ancient Greeks, trousers were first invented by barbarian warrior women. And they're really not that far off with that idea. The real-life models or parallels for Amazons were the Scythians of the Black Sea area and the steppes. These nomadic people, men and women alike, spent their lives on horseback. And we need to keep in mind, this is where the first domestication and horse riding actually occurred, by their ancestors on the steppes. Horse riders, men and women alike, needed practical, comfortable leg coverings for a life on horseback. And it was the first people to ride horses in Eurasia who created trousers. Trousers are the first tailored articles of clothing. The Greeks wore simple rectangles of cloth pinned together, whereas trousers involve sewing together, piecing together various cut-out fabric, and had to be tailored with strong seams. Some of the earliest examples of trousers have been discovered in the graves of Scythian women and men buried with their quivers full of arrows and their horses. Here's an example of some very ancient trousers from 3,000 years ago. So trousers, horses, bows and arrows. I've mentioned that several times. The combination appears again and again in Greek vase paintings of Amazons. And it takes us to a very important point. The horse and the bow and trousers, those are the great equalizers of men and women in Scythia. It's interesting that Greek women used perfume jars, jewelry boxes, cosmetic boxes, depicting Amazons. They're very favorite images on perfume jars for Greek women show Amazons in their fabulous trousers. And here's Antiope herself wearing close-fitting leggings or trousers. Well, let's go back to the action on the stage on the Broadway play. Antiope, played by Katharine Hepburn, resists Theseus' advances at first. She passionately declares her independence as an Amazon. But in the last act of the play, the playwright resorts to a romantic love scene to sweeten that same sour taste that was left by the Athenian official message delivered by the Greeks more than 2,000 years ago. The roles of an Amazon warrior and a proper wife were mutually exclusive. So Antiope, Katharine Hepburn, falls in love with the Greek he-man Theseus. He becomes her love conquest. And Antiope becomes subservient to Theseus, who then assumes the role of dominant husband on the stage. And as the play closes, all the Amazon women come to realize the value of masculine leadership, and they concede all the control to the men. This play was made into a Hollywood film in 1933, a different star. In 1942, it became a long-running Rodgers and Hart musical on Broadway. I think it was their longest-running musical. So in every version of the story of Antiope, even in modern times, the Amazon ends up as the tamed wife of Theseus, king of Athens. But there's never a happy ever after for Amazons in Greek myths, as we've already seen. The killing of Queen Hippolyta by Hercules outraged the Amazons, and Antiope's downfall was the Amazons' worst nightmare. Antiope now is no longer a headstrong warrior huntress, whether she was kidnapped or went on her own free will. Confined to the shuttered existence of other Greek wives, never to ride or hunt or shoot with her companions, Antiope's married life stands in stark contrast to the notorious independence of the Amazons. Well, in the myth, provoked by the violent attacks of Hercules and Theseus, the Amazons vow revenge on Athens. And the myth tells us how the Amazons amassed a great army to carry out their mission of avenging the death of Queen Hippolyta, and they want to rescue Antiope from captivity in Athens. This mythic sequel to the abduction of Antiope by Theseus created a new dilemma and suspense for the Greek audience. The illustrious myth of the Athenians' war against the Amazons would test the power of the young city-state of Athens. It would also challenge the conflicting loyalties of the former Amazon Antiope. So the Greeks were curious in these stories. The stories all spin around these questions. Would Antiope set aside women's work take up weapons to help defend her loved ones and her city from a terrible enemy. But her city is now Athens, and her own people, the Amazons, are the enemy. Would she defect, join her sister Amazons? And what was Antiope's final fate? And let's see if I can... Athens' victory to the over the Amazons in the great battle for Athens was featured in public wall paintings throughout the city and in monumental sculptures in Athens and on the great shield of Athena in the Parthenon. You can see a recreation on the right. There were many strands and versions of what happened to Antiope in the great battle for Athens in art and literature. Some vase paintings seem to suggest that Antiope is fighting on the side of the Amazons. Other vase paintings seem to show her fighting at Theseus's side. The main myth that we have tells us that Antiope remained loyal to Theseus and her adopted homeland, Athens. The Greeks could approve of wives and mothers fiercely defending their family and home in desperate straits, even though they thought that went against women's true nature. So it was exciting and suspenseful for the Greek audiences to imagine the tame Amazon suddenly recovering her long-suppressed warrior soul in defense of Athens, of course. This is one of the Parthenon sculptures in the British Museum. It's thought to represent Antiope in that great battle. In the Greek myth, Antiope dies during the Battle of Athens, and some said she was accidentally killed by another Amazon who was aiming her javelin at Theseus. Both of those Amazon graves, Antiope and the Amazon who killed her, were shown to travelers in Athens, according to Pausanias. As we've seen, that Greek mythic script demanded that all Amazons must end up defeated and dead. But outside the world of myth, things could be different. Outside the world of Greek myth, in their historical accounts of actual barbarian cultures, cultures that didn't speak Greek, that was they called them barbarians, the Greek writers presented more realistic stories in which women warriors sometimes win their battles and live to fight again. And as I mentioned earlier, in the myth of the quest for Hippolyta's war belt, after overcoming the Amazons and killing their queen, the Greeks took many Amazons captive. Antiope, as we saw, was just one of many Amazon prisoners. She ended up in Athens, condemned to live the opposite of an Amazon's life. But what happened to those other Amazons? The myth doesn't say, but the historian Herodotus, writing in the 5th century BC, suggests that they could have survived. In Herodotus's account of the origin of a coalition of nomadic Scythian tribes that appeared on the steppes in the 7th century BC, Herodotus refers to a Greek expedition to northern Turkey or Pontus as a historical event in the misty remote past. Long ago, he says, a Greek force battled Amazons on the southern shores of the Black Sea coast. The Greeks captured many women and sailed off with them in 3 ships. He continues with the following story, explaining how some of those Amazon prisoners escaped from their Greek captors and established a new tribe north of the Black Sea. The Amazons on the ships, he says, managed to get a hold of their weapons, and they killed all the Greek sailors on board. They took over the ship. But with no knowledge of boats, these are horsewomen, not sailors, the horsewomen drifted at sea, they had no idea how to sail. They were swept away to the northern coast of the Black Sea. This was the territory of semi-nomadic Scythians. The shipwrecked Amazons set off on foot and came across, fairly shortly, a herd of horses. The skilled horsewomen seized those horses and immediately began raiding and plundering the new territory. They took up their old lifestyle. The local Scythians retaliated against this band of strange marauders. And in the fighting, some Amazons were killed. And now the Scythians discover that the strangers were women. They decided among themselves that these strong Amazons would make wonderful wives. The Scythian elders got together. They sent out a detachment of young Scythians, men, with orders to track the Amazons. They were not to fight the women, but follow them, take their cues from those Amazons and make camp next to them, try to approach them, and above all, convince them to join our clan. Herodotus tells us that once the Amazons realized that those young men were no threat, they stopped chasing them away each night and permitted the youths to camp a little closer. Each group, says Herodotus, owned nothing but their weapons and their horses. The men and women, he says, lived the same sort of life, hunting rabbits and deer and stealing horses from other groups in the neighborhood. The Scythian men soon noticed that the Amazons often walked some distance from their camp, alone or in pairs. The young men followed suit. One day, a Scythian youth came upon a single Amazon by herself. They didn't speak the same language. He made advances. She responded in a friendly manner. They made love in the grass. Herodotus says, afterwards, the Amazon gestured to indicate that he should return the next day and bring a friend. Come to the same spot. She made it clear, says Herodotus, that she would bring another Amazon the next day. The Scythian returned to his camp and regaled the others with his adventure. Next day, he and a comrade went to the same place. He found his Amazon waiting for him with a friend. And after the success of this, what you might call a double date, the rest of the young Scythians and Amazons arranged to meet for sex often. And Herodotus says that they pair bonded. He goes on to say the two camps decided to be united, and the Amazons and the Scythians continued to live together as equals and companions, enjoying riding, hunting, raiding other groups on the steppes. The women quickly picked up the men's language, says Herodotus, and when they were able to understand each other, the young men suddenly remember their orders. They make their proposal. We have parents and property. Come and live with our people, said Herodotus says. This is what their proposal was. He tells us the Amazons' unanimous reaction. Impossible. No, we cannot agree. We could never live among your women. We live to shoot arrows, throw spears, and ride horses. We have no knowledge of women's chores. Your women never leave home to hunt or explore or for any other reason. We would never be able to live like that, unquote. The Amazons present their own counterproposal. Quote, if you really want our relationship to go on, you wish to do what would be fair and honorable, go back to your parents, get your belongings, return to us. Then let us go off by ourselves and live just as we have been doing. Unquote. I think it's significant that the Amazons are not averse to marriage itself. It's just that they're proposing a different sort of union based on equal partnership. According to Herodotus, they characterize this kind of companionship union as, quote, fair and honorable. Well, the young men are persuaded by their lover's argument. They do what the women request, and when they return with all their possessions, the Amazons have another proposal to make. We're uneasy about staying in this region. The land is just too ravaged from all of our raids. If you really resolve to make a new life with us, let's leave this country and head north across the Don River. That would be north of the Black Sea to the steppes of southern Russia. And their mates consent to this plan. According to Herodotus, the band of Amazons and Scythians rode northeast for 6 days. And here on the steppes, the new coalition decided to stay. They became known as the Sarmatians. This new tribe agreed to raise their girls and boys alike. To this day, remarked Herodotus, the women and the men wear the same clothing. All learn to ride horses at an early age. Everyone masters the bow and spear. The women practice their old Amazon way of life, regularly riding out on horses to go hunting, to make war, raiding, either with the men or by themselves without the men. Young women, he says, ride out on raids, and they do not form a permanent union until they prove themselves in battle. And here again, I'll just point out, it was the horse and the bow that were the equalizers here. The women on a horse with a bow and a quiver could be just as fast and just as deadly as the men. In Herodotus' account, the Scythian men deliberated, they made plans, they advanced some proposals. The Amazons were equally proactive. The women invaded, they raided the Scythians' property, they tolerated the approach of the young men, they suggested that the men return for sex, they learned the men's languages, they refused traditional marriage, they proposed that the men bring their belongings to the camp, and they suggested that the group move to new territory. And most significantly, I think, the women persuaded the men that a marriage of equals would be fair and honorable. Herodotus' Greek audience could not help but notice that all of these decisions were negotiated among equals, bringing to mind democratic deliberations enjoyed by Athenian males who agree to rule and be ruled in turn. And the Greek listeners, we should keep in mind, were also accustomed to zero-sum contests of winners and losers and males dominating females in their own culture. So this is a fascinating turn of events in the Herodotus story. Now, the Greeks tended to assume, as we saw, that if men were strong, then women must be weak and vice versa. In the myth about Antiope, she could not be both an Amazon and a traditional wife. And the same ancient Greek assumption appeared in that American Broadway play about Antiope. And in Herodotus' story, however, the surprise answer to that question, who will be dominated and who will be tamed, the answer is no one. Could Greek men and independent women ever agree to become equal companions? Not in Greek myths. But that happy option does occur in Amazon stories of other ancient cultures. And notably, the story preserved by Herodotus about that tribe was not a Greek myth, but a Scythian legend, a foundation story that Herodotus had heard on his travels around the Black Sea. In keeping with the stated goals of his histories, he thought the story would be interesting to his Greek audience. In some barbarian societies, with certain admirable qualities, Herodotus seems to be saying, egalitarianism and respect could include women. About a century after Herodotus told that story, the Athenian philosopher Plato cited the mythic Amazons and the real Sarmatian women as the inspiration for his belief that women could serve as soldiers in his ideal republic. The struggle to find balance and harmony between men and women seems to lie at the heart of almost all Amazon tales that I've found. That timeless tension perhaps helps to explain why in antiquity there were as many love stories as there were war stories. And in the Greek myths about Amazons, war always triumphs over love. But outside the world of Greek mythology and beyond the Greek world, even the Greeks could imagine that women warriors and male warriors might choose to make love and war together as equals and even live happily ever after. Thank you.
I'd like to remind our radio and online audiences that they're listening to Adrian Meyer at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco, speaking about our book, The Amazons. We have about 4 or 5 minutes for questions. So who would like to ask a question? I actually have a question. How does this relate to Athena? Athena was a warrior goddess. Did this make the Greeks more interested, or was it totally unrelated?
It is very interesting that the ancient Greeks had two goddesses who were quite powerful. I mean, Athena is their goddess of war and wisdom. Perhaps that means strategy of war. I'm not sure. But Artemis, the goddess of hunting, was an archer. And she was an independent woman. And they assumed that Amazons of their myth must have worshipped Artemis. So they imagined Amazons worshipping Artemis.
Yeah. Please explain all of this, how it ties into the naming of the Amazon River, South America.
The story goes that the Spanish conquistadors expected to find all the fabulous creatures of Greek mythology in the New World. And so they expected to find centaurs, giants, griffins, and Amazons. And apparently, as they were traveling along that great river, they kept asking about warrior women. with every tribe they met. And each tribe would say, yes, yes, there are warrior women in the next tribe. And so they named it the Amazon River because of their optimism.
But then how did they become Amazon to begin with when the names that you've used for their native lands are so completely different to that? Amazon.
The word Amazon has come down to us from Greek literature, and all modern linguists agree it's not a Greek word. It was borrowed from some other culture and applied to later to mythic, fierce women who either lived alone or rode to war with the men. The word most likely, according to the latest studies, either comes from a northern Caucasian language for forest mother, or it comes from an ancient Iranian Persian word, hamazon, which means warrior.
In the Amazon society, how is domestic raising of children divided up?
That's an interesting question. How was what was Amazon family life like? And I have an entire chapter in my book on Amazon family life. So you can find it there. But the Greeks did a lot of speculation about it because some authors claim that it was women only, no men allowed, and that they got rid of young boys and didn't allow men. But then how did they procreate and perpetuate themselves? So there were all these speculations. From the archaeology, there is no evidence that there were any female-only societies on the steppes. In fact, some of the women buried with weapons with battle injuries are buried with young children and babies. And there are also some graves of men buried with babies. So we can imagine that there was an egalitarian division of chores there in families.
The screen that you show there, who are the people in the center of the top area? Those contemporary Mongols?
This?
Yes.
Yes, I put that there because it shows the girls and boys in horse racing together. They race races together, compete with each other today.
So the Upper Mongolia, Lower Mongolia?
I believe that is Lower Mongolia.
Lower, thank you.
Had you heard any
historical sources other than Greek about Amazon?
Yes, the last fourth or third of my book is on traditions of Amazons and warlike women in the Caucasus, in Persia. There's an Egyptian papyrus that is called The Egyptians and the Amazons. And there are oral traditions from Central Asia, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, about warrior women, and even the Chinese chronicles write about warrior women of the steppes. So yes, there are.
And Adrian's book will be available right afterwards. Just time for two more questions.
We have the epic of Gilgamesh.
he's handing the microphone to someone. Oh, I'm sorry.
We have to record the questions.
Yeah. Do we have a literary epic of an Amazon?
No, we don't, but there, most historians believe that there was one that is now lost.
I see.
Written about the time that Homer wrote down the Iliad.
The only other time I've heard of the Sarmatians was in a Hollywood movie about King Arthur. Had you heard anything about that?
I haven't seen that movie, but there is an interesting archaeological discovery by Hilary Cool, an archaeologist in Britain, at Hadrian's Wall at a Roman cemetery. Of legions that were guarding the Hadrian's Wall. Two of the bodies buried there were female cavalry officers, and they were buried with Sarmatian grave goods. Wow. So those were some Sarmatian Amazons who were far from home working as mercenaries for the Romans.
I think the Russians talk about their Sarmatians in their...
Yes. Yeah.
In Midsummer Night's Dream, Shakespeare has Theseus of Athens married to Hippolyta. Are we talking about different Theseuses and Hippolyta, or was there a reason he made the change?
In the Greek myths, and even on the vase painting inscriptions of Amazons, the names Hippolyta and Antiope are used interchangeably for the queen of the Amazons of Pontus.
Very quick.
Very quick. The play, was that written by a man, perhaps?
Oh, yes.
And what did the Romans make of all this in Roman mythology?
There is someone at San Diego State who has written a dissertation on Roman views of Amazons, and I'm hoping she's going to turn that into a book. That'll be great. In my book, I talk about Pompey the Great and his encounters with women warriors in what is now the Republic of Georgia. And he actually captured some of them alive and took them back to Rome and displayed them in his triumph. Interesting. Yeah.
That's a great way to end your triumph.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Adrian, for a great talk on the Amazon.
Thank you.
So ends another event at the Commonwealth Club in its 113th year of enlightened discussion.